Welcome to Special Sauce, Serious Eats podcast about food and life. Every week on Special Sauce, we talk to some of the leading lights of American culture, food folks and non-food folks alike.
We always thought that the Russians would come and invade us. So every Swede that could afford it had a summer house. And in that basement, still to this day, they have a lot of preserved food. So having lingonberries over 2 years was not strange, because you never knew.
Today, it is my pleasure to continue our conversation with chef restaurateur, entrepreneur, and author Marcus Samuelsson. Born in Ethiopia, Marcus was adopted by a Swedish couple. He trained as a chef in Sweden and worked in Swiss and French kitchens before coming to the U.S. as a trainee at Aquavie. There, he rose to become head chef, earned 3 stars from the New York Times, won the James Beard Award for Best Chef, New York City. Later, in the neighborhood he'd come to call home, he opened a reimagined reincarnation of a classic Harlem watering hole, the Red Rooster.
Every day when I walk to work, it's always the same thing. The drink last night was fantastic. And why is the chicken so expensive? And you know what? Can my cousin get a job?
Welcome back to Special Sauce, Marcus Samuelsson. Let me sort of set the stage. You've achieved great things in the fine dining world. And then it's like, oh, yeah, I'm going to open this restaurant in Harlem, even though there weren't a lot of restaurants where all kinds of people gathered.
Yeah.
Like, what the hell were you thinking?
I know, right? Going back to 9/11 and that horrible, horrible event, I think still messes with us all in some point or other. Every New Yorker has their own take, where they were, what they were doing,
sure,
and how it impacted them afterwards. And I was cooking with Michael and Monica a week before, at the Towers.
Michael, of course, survived, but sadly his whole staff perished on 9/11.
That moment, in many ways, I still think New York is recovering itself emotionally from that in many, 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 many ways. And asking an idea, where is fine dining at? There is, for me, fine dining is pre-9/11 and post-9/11.
Interesting.
And for me, it's always been great. It's just different. And as a chef, being in Midtown, I started to ask myself, what's my purpose here? Is it just cooking for the 1% of the 1%? Or is there maybe another purpose? And my mother was the driving force of this. She always said, why do we always have to travel to have your food? And she asked me a very good question. Why do you trust the bankers' taste so much? Only the bankers. Marcus, you didn't grow up with bankers. You grew up with people working in the post office. You grew up with people working in as school teachers. So these fundamental things. And one day she just said to me, why don't you cook where you live? Open a restaurant, cook where you live. And that idea, and then I've already moved up to Harlem and I started this idea. Do you think, and it was this many conversations. Professionally, I always listened to my father. But my father has passed away. My Swedish father has passed away at this point. And your mom, even though, I mean, I'm in my early 30s now, my mom became both father and mother in the same role, right? And we started this long conversation. And I said, well, what would that look like? Well, just cook good food. And then once I started to see Harlem in a different way, I realized that just like many magical places in urban America, Harlem is on a different grid. So it can't be measured in the same way as you measure Midtown or downtown.
Uh-huh.
And when I mean that, the great food could be after church. They could serve the best cornbread in a church. Some of the best oyster could be picked up, you know, by a Jamaican dude in the park.
Yes, the food culture is so much more diverse
than in just restaurants.
Yeah.
Right? And this is before the food trucks movement, right? I could have some of the best Jamaican jerk in what I call the sometimes restaurant. I found him in the park one Sunday, but I could never find him in the same place 2 Sundays in a row. So I started to look just as much as you've done with Serious Eats. You look at all food. You just don't look at a four walls experience as one bigger and better than the other. And that's what I started to realize. Wow, I have to match the energy of Harlem. My restaurant cannot look like a version of Aquavit. It actually has to look at Sunday after church, all that bustle and hustling just put into a restaurant. Mm. And now it was speaking the rhythm of jazz.
Yeah. I mean, like, it really does. When you walk in, there's that bar that it really does feel like it's like a street corner with walls.
Yes. I mean, that was very much the idea, right? Making sure that the guy that sells glasses outside, he's just much as welcome as the person that came from downtown versus the Swedish or the Japanese tourist. When get better off is when they sit next to each other. I was always the magical room at the Four Seasons where you could never hear what the table next door was saying. I wanted to create something opposite against that. So it was really about creating a joyful experience that was in and of Harlem, not just happened to be in there.
And did you get a lot of pushback? Like, who's this dude? And why? How can he say he represents Harlem?
Yeah. I mean, I love the fact that we got pushback because that meant, that means that the community care. Every day when I walk to work, it's always the same thing. Hey, I'm just going to go downtown to work and then I come back up. And why is the chicken so expensive? And you know what? The drink last night was fantastic. This is can my cousin get a job? Like, that's every day, right?
Got it.
But if they don't have a buy-in in my restaurant, right? If they don't feel engaged, that would be the worst day ever walking to work. So this restaurant is more than a restaurant because the community is so heavily engaged.
Yeah, that's interesting. In the book, in the Red Rooster cookbook, which is much more than a cookbook, there's a lot of talk about fried chicken, which is one of my favorite topics in the whole world. You obviously went into major R&D mode. You did talk to the right people. I noticed Charles Gabriel. You gave a little soapbox to Charles Gabriel from Charles' Southern Kitchen. You even recount a conversation you had with John Legend where you're obsessing about your fried chicken recipe and finally just said, Mark, just cook the fucking chicken.
Yeah, exactly. And not only that, he said, I'll come up and show you how to cook the goddamn bird.
And you wrote, I could taste my chicken. It tasted like fear.
Yes, it did. Because the chef side of me wanted to come up with this perfect sort of technical thing. And the one thing that I've learned is that fried chicken is also an emotional endeavor. So it was not being too clever, but also letting it go a little bit, right? But there were choices. Dark meat, bone in, skin on. All of those are different than using the breast, skin off, because then you get a drier bird, right? So it was emotionally cooking. When I cooked downtown, I constantly thought about it from a technical endeavor, right? And I actually didn't think so much emotionally about the food. I thought about it more from a technical.
Right, this is the brain meeting the soul.
Exactly. So both having an intellectual art, but a deliciousness. Never give up on delicious.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like being a classical musician. And then you're going to say, you know what? I'm going to start playing jazz now.
It's true. It's true. We could spend all day talking about music because you have playlists galore.
Yeah.
But in the book, and I was in the jazz business for a long, long time, which you didn't even know.
No.
But music really does play an incredibly meaningful role, obviously in Harlem historically, but even at the Red Rooster.
Yeah. Our restaurant wouldn't be there without the art. Those artists and the art on the wall is not because it's blue or green, and we like that. It really informs you where in the place. And without the musicians eat staff meal with us. They are the one that when the mood, when you're hitting that note and you feel like the restaurant's getting mundane, the musicians are the one bringing it up a notch, and you feel like you're in this sort of organized cosmos that you just don't want the life. You just don't want the evening to end.
Yeah.
And then we push back with the food or the hospitality. And then it's this back and forth.
It seems to me like you're riffing on, it's like a combination of church and restaurant and the street.
But it's great that you really broke it down like that, because church is in there. It wouldn't be Red Rooster.
A quick shout out to one of our sponsors who brings you this message. HelloFresh, the meal kit delivery service that makes cooking fun, easy, and convenient. HelloFresh sources the freshest ingredients, measured to exact quantities needed to eliminate food waste, along with step-by-step recipes for delicious meals designed to take 30 minutes to make, all approved by a registered dietitian on staff. And everything is delivered in a special insulated box, always with free shipping. Serious Eats listeners can receive $35 off their first week of deliveries. Just visit HelloFresh.com and enter the promo code Serious Eats when you subscribe.
So I can't help but notice, after having reread both of your books, well, you have more books, but these are the two books I read, the memoir and the Red Rooster Cookbook, of all of the parallels with the Obamas. Marcus Samuelson and the Obamas, they were destined to intersect on this earth.
Yeah.
So how did that take place?
Well, I mean, it really started with, I actually knew I met the president before he got elected when he came to New York, being a congressman out of Illinois, Chicago, you know.
Really? So before he was a senator? Even.
Yeah, no, so that
oh,
time.
Senator.
Yeah,
okay.
Senator out of Chicago.
Right.
And then just...
Oh, right, because he lost his race for Congress.
Then we met, obviously, when we did the state dinner, and which was an incredible event to do the very first state dinner. And then being lucky enough and fortunate enough to being asked to come back and cook a couple of times at different occasions. But when he came to the Red Rooster, he was like, I always say it was like the Yankees and the Knicks winning at the same time and the celebrating in Harlem. That will never happen, but that's how he felt.
The weird thing is, now that I'm talking to you, the Red Rooster is almost perfectly emblematic of the Obama presidency.
Yep.
I mean, they're sort of mirror images. One is obviously a food and
yeah.
cultural establishment, and his is a
Thank
political
you.
Endeavor. But I think that's what's amazing. There's a bunch of questions that I always ask everyone, and I know you're going to have really cool answers. But I do have to ask you, do you have dual citizenship now?
I have dual citizen. Trust me, I was one of the first people to sign up when that was allowed.
Wow.
And I was so proud when I got my American citizenship. I walked over Brooklyn Bridge, and when I got on top of the bridge, I just looked there and said, I live here now. You know, like it's one of these personal goals that, you know, wow, I'm part of it now.
Do you think that that Donald Trump actually, do you think this could have happened when Donald Trump was president, or you're glad that you don't have to answer that question?
Well, I mean, I haven't even thought, there's so much about what's being built around, you know, Michelle Obama's food program,
right?
The openness to having us chefs coming there. Now, forget me, like all the chefs that have been coming
right.
there. And everybody put their, whether they were Democrat or Republican, I know all my chef friends from all different types of that, but they were just so excited to go to the White House
right.
and cook and be part of it.
So
I have
worried.
No idea. I just not.
Yeah.
It's just a different time.
Yep.
I have no clue.
So what do you make, and this is a really interesting question for you, when there's nothing in the house to eat? Like, if you just come and you haven't had a chance to, what's always in the fridge and what will you make for you and your gorgeous wife
yeah.
who we haven't even had a chance to talk about?
You know, we always have this Ethiopian indigenous food at home. So, for example, we have fermented kale at home that we got sent from Ethiopia. So I'll make very often, it could be something like cracked wheat, you know, just cracked beautiful, like almost like Bulgarian, you know. And I might toast that up and then add in a little bit of the, you know, the dried, beautiful fermented kale. Then we go. Then it becomes jazz, right? If we have tomato, we throw that in. Even canned. So it becomes a dish. And then I always finish with a little bit of spiced butter and just like a beautiful 3-4 minute egg.
Wow.
On top.
You know, having grown up often hungry.
Yeah.
And there was that moment you talk about in Sweden where you discovered that this magic box,
yeah.
also known as the refrigerator.
The refrigerator.
Do you think that was part of your inspiration? And then when you just talked about the meal you put together, you mentioned the fridge. Is the fridge emblematic of something magical for you?
I do think this idea of when I remember cooking at the 3-star Michelin kitchen, I always remember, why are we throwing out this food? Like we always went for the center cut, right? Everything else either got the staff meal was thrown out. And I was never okayed with that, right? But it wasn't my place to ask questions for it. But I do remember that idea of, you know, is there something we can do with that? And waste of food, when you haven't had food in your, or even related to poverty the way my grandmother was related to poverty, you always ask, but we can do something, make something out of that, right? So I remember that I know there's fundamentally something wrong while just throwing this out, but it wasn't my place to question.
Right.
Right? So this idea of making make do kitchen, make do with what you got, has always been my first love of food.
Wow.
And if my grandmother Helga, there was always a season for something, whether we picked mushroom, pickled mushroom, fished herring, pickled herring, smoked herring. There was never, imagine those, you know, how you go into a Chinese restaurant. The family sits there in off hours and pick peas or do something.
Yeah.
There's always a season for something there, right? Something to do. That's how my grandmother was. And it was, think about Sweden where there's short seasons or long winters. So there was always a preserving season. So would you do your homework with her? It was homework, but then labeling lingonberries. You know,
so refrigeration is sort of part of a larger thought that you have about preserving.
Absolutely. But the preservation in Scandinavia was also based on one very important thing. We always thought, growing up in the era that I grew up, that the Russians would come and invade us, right?
Wow.
So every Swede that could afford it had a summer house. And in that basement, still to this day, they have a lot of preserved food. So having lingonberries over 2 years was not strange because you never knew at that time. And you know what? It gives me chills to this day and the moment we're in right now. You don't play with that. That's like a serious issue.
So, okay. So we have to do the buffet.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of questions that I always ask everyone, and I know you're going to have really cool answers. Who's at your last supper?
Yeah.
And this is something that I'm dying to ask you. No family allowed.
Like, yeah.
Could be living, dead, musicians, yeah. Artists, politicians. So I need four people at your last supper.
Absolutely. David Bowie.
David Bowie.
Absolutely.
Just because you had to throw me another curveball.
No, because he taught me so much about being different, going for it.
Being okay with it.
Being okay with it. Diego Maradona, which is a soccer player of my, was the Messi of my time.
Yes, you were a frustrated soccer. We didn't get a chance to talk about
your failed soccer player
years in Sweden.
Miss Leah Chase started Duke Chase in New Orleans.
The first lady of New Orleans cooking,
absolutely.
And in many ways the first lady of American cuisine.
Yes, absolutely. And the last one would be Nelson Mandela.
Wow. Can I come? That is an awesome group.
We would have fun, though. We would have fun.
We would have big fun.
Leo would make sure that we had fun.
We would have big fun. And what are you eating?
I think we're eating some fried chicken. We're drinking bourbon. And we're sharing stories between Argentina, South Africa, the South, New Orleans, and England, Brixton, even to be specific for David Bowie.
Now, in Obama's honor, wouldn't you be having some pie?
Yes.
Because I've heard that my sources tell me that he loves pie.
He does.
And I don't know, he might be insulted that you didn't just include him in your guest list. But I'll let it go.
Okay.
So who's the one person, living or dead, you would love to break bread with one-on-one? You know, and it could be someone you've met, but maybe it's better if it's someone you've never met, but you've always been curious about and you think they'd have a lot to say and you'd have a great time.
I'd probably go back to music again, and I would probably ask, you know, Marvin Gaye about if he can do it all again. Just tell me some stories, you know, because you're just reading his book. I still feel in the end, maybe he's not going to die. Maybe his father's not going to shoot.
Right. And his spirit is so still with us.
Yes.
More than ever, really.
Absolutely. I just felt like he was just hitting his stride. He was just coming back, and boom.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Wow. That is deep, man. So what are your guilty pleasures?
Oh, I think, I love popcorn. I love just like, and I
salted,
like
buttered.
Salted. You can give me even like now, like Nouveau popcorns, like bacon popcorn, dill popcorn, whatever. I love all that. So that idea of eating warm popcorn with a little bit too much butter on, it's always brings me back to childhood.
Well, Marcus, thank you so much for sharing your
thank
special
you
sauce.
Thank you so much for having me, and congratulations to everything you do.
Oh, please, please. And if you're ever in New York, you have to check out the Red Rooster in Harlem. It's awesome, and by all means, read Marcus's terrific memoir, Yes, Chef, and pick up a copy of the newly released Red Rooster Cookbook, which is so much more than a cookbook. So long, serious eaters. We'll see you next time.